Hey guys, today's episode touches on pretty sensitive content, such as rape and sexual assault. If you would rather not hear that, go down to the show notes. We've made timestamps and you can skip it. Thanks.
AFI Backstage Stories.
Ah, man. You know, usually we come into this thing and I feel like...
with a little more drive.
Well, you know, like sometimes I come into this thing with you and I'm like, all right, you know, I don't really know exactly what I want to talk about, but I know that... Should I go from this side or from this?
From the front.
From the front, like right. That. Like there. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Give it to the guitar player to not know how the microphone's supposed to be. But, like sometimes I come in and I don't really have anything in mind, and then like things just kind of connect, and then we just end up talking about what comes anyway. But this week, man, I think we have a really packed show. I have a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah, and we once again had one of those weird situations. First of all, it's very nice to be back after my 2 week kind of podcast. Absence.
Yeah, man, it's nice to have you back. It's
absence. Yeah. And we often have these weird little cringy situations where we meet before the show and we don't really get a conversation rolling because in our minds it's like, okay, let's get it on the show.
That's true. That's the only unfortunate thing is like when we meet up after 2 weeks, we want to catch up as friends.
Yeah.
But then we're like, well, we have so much to talk about. Let's just talk about it on the show. And we actually haven't set up a time. We only had like one time in the last few months that we hung out that wasn't part of the show, right?
That's true.
It was like that one pizza night where, oh yeah, I showed you John Wick.
And it was great.
It's great.
Everybody go watch John Wick and afterwards watch the documentary of Keanu Reeves working out for being able to do John Wick things.
Oh, his behind the scenes training?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. Actually, I saw a YouTube video yesterday about a guy who was trying to claim that the way Keanu Reeves poses in his photos with women, like just a little backstory, all of the photos you ever see of Keanu Reeves posing with fans, it's very obvious that he does like the hover hand. Do you know the hover hand? Or like if you go put your arm around a woman and you do this, like not touching the skin, mm-hmm. like you keep like a 2-inch or 3-inch distance.
Like putting your arm around a waist without touching.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. As if like they could have easily photoshopped the person into you just holding your arm out to
okay,
no one.
Okay. Okay.
So it looks kind of weird. And like when you look at some photos of people doing this in like high school prom photos and stuff, usually the hover hand is a sign of insecurity. Like maybe they're a bit nervous to touch the girl, or that you know whatever. Like they just don't want to be like awkward. But it looks really funny in photos. And Keanu Reeves says it with all of his photos. He does the hover hand with everybody. And like, or sometimes he'll like, when they do a selfie with him, he won't, you know, put his arm around the shoulder or whatever, but he'll stand like just behind their shoulder, put his hands on his knees, like not touching them at all, and kind of like squat behind them. And there was a bunch of theories about why he does this, you know? And so the reason that this YouTuber even made a video was because he had this theory. He read an article where someone said, like, you know, Keanu Reeves is the celebrity from heaven that we didn't even know we needed. You know, like, he's such a, I don't know, some sort of, like, hyper-feminist, kind of guy where he's like, I respect you so much, I won't even touch you in the photos. Which is one theory. It's one theory. And this YouTuber was like, he was saying that Keanu Reeves does the hover hand stuff because he's at such a point of fame now that he hasn't had since the early 2000s. Like, you know, since The Matrix, he hasn't really had like the world's strongest career. You know, he did a few romantic comedies. He did some really cool indie movies. Like, there's a lot of stuff I personally like him in. But in terms of like big Hollywood movies, like since the last Matrix, there was like Constantine, and there was like the Alien, the End of the World movie. I forgot what it was called. But he kind of got kind of kicked out of Hollywood for a little while. And then all of a sudden, John Wick came up and now he's humongous again. Dude, he's got like, he's rebooting.
And an absolute meme legend.
He's I mean, he did this, you know, that, what was that, that festival where he spoke, it was like Comic-Con or something, I forgot, where he spoke, he had the blazer and he's like, you know, he's like, you're beautiful, you're amazing. And then people made it to a meme. Anyway, he's like a hyper viral meme.
Yeah.
Super successful John Wick. They're rebooting Bill and Ted. They're rebooting The Matrix. He's got a Matrix 4 coming out next year. And it's just like, the theory from the YouTuber was that he's at such a height again that he hasn't had in so long. He's afraid that if he were to give anyone any reason to assume anything was inappropriate with his behavior, that it could be taken away. You know, like, for example, do you know this Neil deGrasse Tyson story where he took a photo with a woman, he like touched her arm, and then she tried to accuse him of sexual assault? She tried to like Me Too Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Okay.
So the photo was like him, it's online. He's like there with some woman, I forget if it's like a fan maybe. And then the photo is that just from my perspective, it looks very innocent. I have not read her story, so I can't vouch for what may or may not have happened there. But he has like both of his hands together just on the crease of her elbow. Like just, oh, look at that. Because she had a solar system on her tattoo on her shoulder, like on the back. So he like turns her and is like, look at that for the photo they were taking. And apparently after that photo was taken, she like accused him of like, you know, grabbing her and it was really inappropriate and stuff. And maybe it was. I don't know. I wasn't there. But the fact was that Neil deGrasse Tyson is like such a person of power. And then like that, just that one accusation caused a lot of trouble for him. It didn't derail his career really, but it caused a lot of trouble for a while, like a few months. And I think Keanu, because like this theory that the YouTuber had, I forgot his name. The theory he was saying was that he's at such a place of power again that he's consciously choosing to do the hover hand.
And not get into any weird situations.
Exactly. To avoid it entirely. That way, if anyone were to say like, Keanu, you know, Keanu touched me inappropriately in a photo or something, they would look through every photo he's done with fans and he's never touching anyone. And I also think that's kind of a theory I could believe. Or maybe he's just a germaphobe. I mean, who knows?
Yeah. Maybe he's a friend of Bill Gates and he knew about this weird virus already years ago, so he avoided any form of physical contact.
It's like, I was socially distancing years ago.
That's a terrible impression. I also could totally believe that when you're that huge and that famous, that you just don't want to. I think you have to think about your how people see you and how those photos look, etc. Yeah. And I could imagine that he just at this point, okay, I don't like touching everybody and hugging and shaking hands, etc. Okay, but if I do it, I gotta do it straight, so no touching, no more.
Right.
Plus bonus of there can not really be any photos be taken that might be interpreted.
Right. There's no photo that's going to be like, well, look here. See, he's grabbing my waist. And after that, he tried to kiss me or something. It's like, he's so distant from everyone. But yeah, it just made me think about that. It came up so randomly yesterday. I think it was just in my like autoplay on YouTube. Like this guy just popped up and, yeah, that's a really, really interesting way to think about it. But I don't know. I mean, everything I've ever known about him is, I mean, just the same as everyone else, that he's just extremely humble and really helpful and kind and thankful to be in the business at all. I heard that he would give up like huge chunks of his paychecks in big blockbuster movies to be able to work with great actors. Like I think in The Devil's Advocate, which I personally like a lot, that he gave up a big portion of his paycheck to go so he could work with Al Pacino.
Mm-hmm.
And then like in the...
So that's for the production they could...
So they can afford him.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I think also in the Matrix movies, like the second or third one, I think he also took a pay cut so that the production could afford the best special effects. I think there was like something with the cost was just so high and he was such an A-lister at the early 2000s. I think he was like, you know what? I'm already worth millions. You know, by the time he had done the first Matrix, that was it, you know?
Yeah.
And Bill and Ted was a huge success too. So, yeah, maybe that's just him protecting himself now.
Maybe he's just a legend.
I think he's just a legend, man. He's just such a good guy. Did you ever see the video where he was in he was taking like a basic economic commercial flight, and it couldn't something. I think it had to land in the middle of nowhere, like some small town. I mean, I'm probably butchering all of this, but I think some small town in California, and he needed to get back to Los Angeles or something. And so instead of, you know, taking a private jet or a helicopter or a limo or whatever he could do, not that he has to, but that he could do, he, like, you know, talks to everybody in the airport who's been stranded too. He, you know, tries to find out, how can we all get our bags? How can we get our stuff? They're like, oh, well, you know, we can't fly any more planes out of this airport today, but you guys could either stay in a hotel and get the flight tomorrow, or you could take a bus. And they're all just like, well, why don't we just take a bus? And then, like, he rides on the bus with everybody, and they, like, you know, they go to Hardee's, this fast food place, and he's, like, showing them music on his phone, and it's so humble, it's so nice, you know?
Now, that's cool.
He's not in a rush.
Wholesome Keanu content.
Yeah. You know, I think that's also post John Wick, too, so he's, like, kind of huge again.
Yeah.
He's just chilling on the plane. But, yeah, there's been so much this week. I think we might even try and call this episode like the good, the bad, and the ugly or something.
Something like that. And I would like to start with something
good.
Good. Yeah. I reckon it was good because you were on a little mountain hut all weekend and recording.
Yeah. Yeah.
For some new record, which is not yours. Would you tell us more about that?
Yeah, it's the first time I've been a session musician in a long time, man. It was really cool. So I think the person I recorded for likes to stay pretty, like, more or less anonymous in a way, because of, you know, the other work that he does and stuff. It's not like some crazy mystery. It's just, you know, this is more of a hobby for him. It's just a friend. And anyway, so he hired me and my good friend Marcus and my good friend Tim and had some older guys. So he's an older guy and he has a couple of dudes who live in his hometown in this mountain town he's been playing with him for like 30 years or something. They're all in their 50s and they're all actually almost 60, I think, except for, well, bass players. I think he's like 10 years younger than them. But anyway, I was the youngest one there. I felt like the baby.
You felt like me.
Dude, it was two 40-year-olds, a 50-year-old, and two 60-year-olds, and me, a 30-year-old. So I was just the last generation for them. And it was really cool. It was so much fun. So, you know, I finished a project that I'm going to talk about also later on Thursday. And then I stayed over. I took a train down to the town, stayed over there at a friend's house. And then on Friday morning, I actually went to my mother-in-law's house and had lunch with her. And then we all packed up the stuff and took this big bus up to some crazy cabin that I had never seen before. I think it's like 500, 600 meters up. And it was beautiful, man. It was just big enough to fit five or six people moderately comfortably.
So you also stayed there overnight, etc.
Yeah, I've stayed there Friday night and Saturday night, and we came back Sunday. And we had like bunk beds, we had you know, like cases and cases of booze, wine, food, everything. You know, we were not gonna leave, you know? We had a bathroom and a shower there, but no one showered the whole time. Which is kind of gross.
So we know some things don't change. Maybe 13-year-old boys having a LAN party or a bunch of 50-year-olds recording music on the little hut.
Yeah, it doesn't change. It doesn't change. No one showered. The only thing we did was that, you know how in the South, and maybe you can help explain this to me because I didn't know it was so common, but I realized it was really common. You know those like consistently never-ending spring wells from the mountain water?
Yeah.
Is that like really, really, really common? For me, that's crazy that there's just an endless spring of water pouring out of this, like a pipe from the ground. You know, it looks like a tree trunk and there's like a little tube coming and it's just this endless well of water. We all just dipped our heads under there a few times, like just to get the cold water on our necks, but that was the most we showered. But is that just all over the town? Is it like all over that region?
Is it like a wooden trunk?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's a thing. for...
Is it an agricultural thing, or is it just for...
Yeah, I don't want to say anything wrong about this, but I guess originally it is an agricultural thing, but I also guess over the past decades it has become more and more of a thing for tourists when they go for hikes and stop by a little hut, get a little snack or whatever to fill up their water bottles, etc.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I filled up my water bottle like 1,000 times.
But I guess originally it's obviously an agricultural thing.
Okay, I mean, it's really nice, just like fresh mountain water, and you can drink it, you can put a shower in it. It's really nice. And it was this cool little cabin. You could see all the mountains around. And so we had 14 songs to do, which was a lot. But the cool thing was the whole structure was really simple. But basically what this guy does is he chooses famous songs, like, for example, Lola by the Kinks. And he keeps the same exact guitar, like the same progression, the same chords and the vibe, and the same melody.
Yeah. When you drink champagne, it tastes like cherry cola. La 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 Lola.
So he keeps exactly that, but replaces that melody, replaces that text in that melody with his dialect, the southern dialect there in that region. So just puts his own words, his own story into it, but just replaces just keeps the same song. So we had 14 songs to learn. We had like a Pete Townsend song. We had 2 John Prine songs. We had, actually just today on my Instagram, I put up a clip of us doing Souvenirs, the Steve Goodman John Prine song, which is just so beautiful. So the whole thing, the whole structure that he wanted was only 3 acoustic guitars, 1 upright bass, and some harmonies.
Okay.
So it's extremely pure, like the purest.
So not even
a cajon
or something.
Some songs have a cajon.
Okay.
Yeah, and a little shaker.
Okay.
But it was all, everything was done live. So every song is live, and some songs are only 1 take. We would like run it. So basically me and the other 2 guitar players, my friends, we would say like, okay, what's the next song? And so like, let's say one song was like Waterloo Sunset. So then we would say, okay, I'll do the main strumming because I'm not much of an improvisational guitar player, but I'm really good at keeping time. It's like, I'll play this really straight, really clean. Give, you know, for example, Tim, I'll give him the space to do these open phrasings, like really dreamy, and like he can really do these nice harmonies. Marcus can do like put a capo up, do the higher phrasing of the chords, maybe do some picking. And we did that for every song. We just chose like, okay, you do that, I'll do this. Okay, cool. Now it's done.
Marcus is an amazing guitar player.
He's unbelievable.
For those who do not know him, he's a guitar player who lives on a farm and is basically the musical partner of the very famous...
Super successful guy.
Super successful Bavarian comedian, Maxi Schaffroth.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, if you're in the southern part, like from the southern half of Germany down, you may have heard of Maxi Schaffroth. Super, super successful. Like you call it, the style he does is
cabaret.
Cabaret, which is funny because
it's something
cabaret is totally different
yeah, in English. Yeah.
But yeah, that's the style. And yeah, they do like, you know, multi-thousand people rooms, theaters, and stuff.
Won big awards, etc. Yeah.
Many awards. Yeah, they make good money and stuff. And
so you were 3 guitar players, sorry.
3 guitar players. No, it's all good. Marcus is really cool to work with. I mean, he's very sure of himself, and you know, it's similar to like Tim. They just know. It was a good challenge for me too, because they're so familiar with like musical theory.
Yeah.
They're so familiar with this is like, you know, an A dominant 5th over 9, so I'm going to play like a 7th over F sharp or whatever, like blah blah blah.
Some Phrygian improvisation,
some,
whatever.
Some crap. Like, okay, just go do your math and I'll stay here and play the chords, you know? But it was perfect because it was a good challenge for me to try and step up my game. Like, I wanted to be like, no, I belong on this record too. Because they're so good. It's like, okay, well, what can I actually bring to the table? So I was like doing my best picking work, trying to be as clean, as like precise with the time as I possibly could. And Yeah, I really enjoyed doing it. And some songs are really cool too, because it felt so free in the way that we would, like, some songs were these bluesier, heavier songs. So, you know, the singer would start drinking beers at like 2 or 3 or you know, 1. And then like we'd get till 5 o'clock and he's maybe like 4 or 5 beers in. And he'd be like, all right, let's do the blues one. And then, you know, it was like, all right, well, let's get really nasty with this. So then we would do like a shot of Encien, the shot of this really strong, really nice, like flowery schnapps, and just go to town on this blues song, like heavy, trading solos. You know, at some point the singer was like getting up in the middle of the room during the recording and was like hitting the wall and like clapping his hands. And we kept that take because it's just so like live and like in your face and real. And there's a lot of great, like really authentic, raw moments that we just kept. And I think it's going to be a good record. A few of them are really, oh man, like especially the one that I posted today, like this idea, just so pure, like three guys picking their cleanest, playing their best picking of this like bluegrassy country style. I love that. I didn't realize how much I loved it. It's really like harmony.
Yeah.
In my ears, it feels so like, you know, like a hug. And it was so nice to do that. And then some songs are heavy strumming with cajon and really like screaming and heavy. So the whole range is there. And we did Friday night, we did 3 songs. And then Saturday, starting at like 9 in the morning, we did 11 songs.
Oof.
Sometimes we never did more than 3 takes. I'd say 3 was the most. And that was just on like a couple of songs. Most of the time we just did like 2 takes. And everything was there in the moment. You know, we sang harmonies in the moment.
But did you get the songs before this weekend and learn them? Okay.
Yeah. Well, that we kept it. So we still kept it pretty fresh. I mean, for example, we got the list of that he wanted, I think a month ago or 2 months ago. But all of us kind of said like, well, you know, let's listen to the song. Let's know what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
And I ran through the songs, all of them, one whole time with the singer maybe a month ago. And then all of us basically just said like, well, look, let's just listen to it before we do it. So we'd listen to like half of it and say, okay, that's more or less the rhythm. And then we had chord charts with the text in front of us. So we could go like, okay, there's that change. So it didn't, I mean, even if we had never heard it, it was totally fine to just jump in and do it. So, but that was a lot of fun. It was a really, really cool weekend, beautiful weather. We had like this really crazy thunderstorm on Saturday night, which was perfect because we had finished everything. We just sat at this table. We put all the gear away. We got black out hammered, jammed guitar, and like sang every Beatles song that there is. That was so much fun. Like I hadn't sang like Nowhere Man or what was another one we hadn't sang in such a long time. I can't remember, but it was so cool to just, just pop out all these classics and jam and sing along and pound the table. And the only problem was that I had to share a room with the loudest snore I have ever heard in my life.
Is it Tim?
No, it was the singer, man. It was like a hippopotamus in the mud, you know, just... It was terrible, dude. It was absolutely terrible. Well, but. Because there's a...
Did you record it?
Well, no, but it was impossible to sleep. But there's 3 really great jokes.
All right.
That I got from this weekend. And I'm pretty sure all except maybe one can translate just on audio, that you don't have to see me to do it.
Okay.
And I think because we have some heavier content coming up in a little bit, I'll spread them out. So maybe I'll just do one now. And then we can do the other ones later after we talk about the heavier stuff. So this is a great joke. There's a German version. So we all these 3 jokes I heard on when we were drinking on Saturday night. And it's so stupid. All 3 can be told in German and in English. And I heard this first one. I didn't quite understand the verb, but I got the context.
Okay.
So I understood the joke in German and thought it was great. And then I said, oh man, that's a shame that we don't have...
But will you bring it in German?
I didn't ask what that verb was. I should have though, because I could have tried it. But basically, there's like, it's a play on words. And then I'm just saying too much already. I got an English version. I got an English version. So it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. So one night there's a guy, a father, sitting at home on his sofa watching the television. All of a sudden he hears a knock on the door. He gets up, opens the door. There's a young man standing there. And he says, "Hi, nice to meet you. I'm going to say the German title. Say, hi, I'm Tobias, and I'm here to have sex with your daughter." And the guy goes, "To what?" And he goes, "Tobias." Oh, it sucks, man.
I know that one. Sucks. I know that one.
I can't sell it on the audio. I can't sell it here. Damn it.
But I knew that one.
You knew that one already, yeah.
In German, it works with the name Umberto.
Yeah, that was the one. That was the one. Umberto. Was? Umberto. I love that. But what's the what's the verb? Well, ich bin hier zum deine Tochter was? I'm here to what, your daughter?
Mit deiner Tochter Sex zu haben, mit deiner Tochter zu schlafen.
Oh.
Something.
That's where see, I thought was like the prefix to a verb. I'm here, like, for your daughter to something. I'm here to sex you or no, touch
but,
her.
But blah, blah, blah zu tun is like to do. Tun.
Ah, okay. Then that's why I kept. Oh, then you can do that. Then I can translate that. Okay. I thought it was, yeah. Anyway, sometimes those prefixes confuse me. I thought it was something else. Yeah, that's that. Like, oh, man, I love that joke. I'm here to have sex with your daughter. To what? Tobias. I should have sold it differently. But there's some other good ones, too, that don't take so much emphasis on the punchline. They're so silly. They're so silly. But yeah, actually, so before this weekend recording in the mountains, I had a really cool project. So our friend and previous guest, Sebastian Bolenius, is now, as we talked about, he's living in Lisbon, and he's right now he's working for this Portuguese television channel. It's like the big public basic cable channel, a bit like, I think he said it's a bit like Germany's Arte.
Yeah.
So it's RTP. I don't know what that stands for, but I think it's like something Portugal probably. And they have a new show, and I think I might have mentioned this already. The concept being like, yeah, I'll breeze through it.
Yeah,
in case we did.
We talked about this four episodes ago.
Okay,
that you're about to do this.
Right. Okay. So just like a quick briefing would be that like each episode picks a person in a specific field, gives them a problem, and then they come up with the concept of how to solve, you know, the problem. And so Basti and I, he flew over to Munich, and we came up with the concept, and that was also a really great collaboration because it was kind of fresh and kind of raw, and we built the concept together. Sometimes we would like be shooting something, we would stop recording, we'd talk for 10 minutes and then have the concept for the rest of the day. It was like, oh, we just did it. We just built the story. And it was so nice and fresh to be able to bounce that kind of idea around. And like, I just love working with people like that. It's so relaxed. You're just, you know, you're having fun. You're never stressed. You have plenty of time to get things done because you've already made the whole thing together. You've set it up. And yeah, he came over and on, I think that was Wednesday. Yeah. So Wednesday, he came over, I think Tuesday evening. Then Wednesday morning we started and we shot so the problem was an earworm. And the concept that we came up with was like, okay, a musician thinks about an earworm.
But how to compose it or how to get rid of the earworm?
Both.
Ooh.
First, you dissect it, right? We looked at five or six major, major, all-time famous pop hits that are known from university surveys famously for getting stuck in your head. So we looked at some of these songs and we broke down, you know, what's happening in the song? What key is the song in? What are the chords in the song? You know, are they repeating it a lot? Is it a simple melody? Is it in like a normal register? Is it just going up and going down? And then we looked at what are some solutions people have already put online, like on Mental Floss. There's a link on some suggestions of how to fix it. And we tried those solutions. And then so like we needed to have a journey that I could go on to dive deeper into this and try and like explore the earworm. So it's really cool. We came up with a concept that I would look at, you know, 4 or 5 major pop songs, look at the chords of the songs, see which ones they have in common, which was every single time they had like 4 or 5 of the same chords. And actually, I'm not an Ed Sheeran fan, but there is a great video of him on a British talk show where he has a guitar and he plays like back-to-back completely random pop hits with just the same 4 chords. It's really cool because that's often the case. And so I chose 4 chords from these major songs. I chose C major, E minor, A minor, and D major. And they were all present in all these songs at some point. And I said, okay, I'll choose 3 different composers who have a completely different style of music from each other. One of them being, you know, of course, Tim, who has a strong...
rock.
Strong, yeah, strong, like a lot of strength in rock and country and folk and singer-songwriter style. And then I would look into another composer friend of mine named Giovanni Beck. And he has a lot of strength in cinematic, electronic, maybe like leaning more into like EDM hip hop style. So almost like Hans Zimmer, like very, very cinematic, very eerie electronic style. And then the third person would be David Reichert, who I've worked with on like Hindefing and stuff. And he has his own very, I would say like he's very jazzy.
But has a strong classical background.
And a strong classical background, exactly. Yeah. So that was the 3 that I wanted to try and give them the same 4 chords.
Yeah.
And say, okay, you have to put those 4 chords in that order. You can't change that. But you can change the tempo. You can do whatever you want. 20 or 30 seconds, really short. Make this an earworm. Like, make it as catchy as you possibly can. And that was just that open. I was like, just make it as catchy as you possibly can. You can do anything you want. It doesn't have to be guitar. It can be piano. It can be cellos. It can be e-guitar. It could be anything. And they really pulled through, dude. It was a very interesting journey.
How long, what was the time span they had to solve this problem? Because you went there for shootings. Like for Tim, you took the train or the car, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
1.5 hours ride to his studio and to shoot there.
Yeah.
But I guess he knew about the problem before you actually came there to shoot.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we, the week before Basti flew over, we had texted that was what we would do. And I think I sent them the track like 1 week ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And said, you know, just really quick when you have time, just try and figure out something like this. I think they had a week to do it, maybe a little more, maybe like 9 days or something. Okay. And then they all had 3 totally different approaches. Wednesday, it was just me and him. We did this whole setup where my character or the version of me in the show is like, you know, doing an artsy fartsy immigrants episode. I even mentioned the name. I even give out our... You know, I talk about like our Instagrams, like you can, send us in an idea if you want to do this and this. And like, do you remember when I posted not too long ago, maybe last month, about like, do you have a song stuck in your head? Send it to me. So we just reenacted that where I was like, hey, you know, at Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, whatever, like send me your most addictive songs. And then we from the list, we looked at some songs and that was true. I saved the songs people sent me and looked at the songs. And then we broke down the chords from there. And then from the chords, I wondered if the earworm factor was limited by genre. So I said, why don't we choose 3 composers who have totally different genres and see if they can make something really catchy. So then I chose those guys. Yeah. So then they had the chords, they made the thing. And then Thursday, we went to each person and did an interview with them and played their song, broke down the song.
All within 1 day.
We did it in 1 day. Intense, man. Yeah, we met with Giovanni at 9.
So Giovanni and David are both based in Munich.
Both in Munich.
Okay. Yeah.
That's okay. So we did both of them and we're done with both of them by, I would say 4 o'clock, maybe 3 o'clock. We had like a little bit of a long lunch. And then we drove down to Immenstadt to where Tim is and shot his there. David's was cool too because he didn't do his ahead of time like Giovanni and Tim did. he waited until I showed up to for us to do it together in the moment.
Ooh, because he's a freak.
Because he's a freak. Because he's such a freak, dude. In the best way. And
yeah, yeah.
Oh, and he wanted to like show the viewers or whatever like how fast he can work and how fast we can work together and stuff. Which was great because it kind of broke up the formula a little bit in a cool way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Giovanni's was, he showed us the thing, we broke it down piece by piece, and he talked about his philosophy on what makes something catchy.
Yeah.
And then David's was, you know, we played piano, we played guitar, he had ideas, I sang something, I wrote text, he added saxophone. It was like all in the moment. So he had a lot of interesting stuff going on. And Tim's, he had also prepared it, and we went there, interviewed him, broke it down. And then he told his philosophy. You know, the cool thing was, I really was hoping that all three of them would have a different philosophy on what makes something catchy. And I didn't tell them I wanted that. And they all just happened to do that. Like Giovanni's thing is, he believes very strongly in the process of tension and release. And for if anyone's listening who doesn't really know too much about like behind the scenes of music, that all that basically means is like, you know, this really... this setup before the drop kind of feeling where you get like a little touch of the melody, just a taste of it, and it's teasing it and teasing it and teasing it. You know, like this, and that's the release.
Like every club song ever.
Yeah, club songs is like the perfect example of a very clear tension and release. And then David's was all about the arrangement and the story. So he was like, okay, the melody has to tell a story. Like go, your journey has to start here and it has to end somewhere else. And then, or it has to be able to repeat really smoothly. And it's all about the arrangements. It's all about the things behind the melody that support it. And I thought that was also really interesting. And then Tim's also totally different. He was like, you have to make it as simple as you possibly can and repeat it. And I was like, all right, that makes sense too.
Yeah.
That's all true. It's all true. Look at like, you look at like, somebody that I used to know, somebody that's super simple, super repetitive, or like moves like Jagger. Oh my God, man. Super repetitive, super easy. Lady Gaga, Poker Face, Bad Romance, like all these songs are really simple melodies, super, super repetitive. So it was a good, it was a really, really informative day. And I have to say, we were so impressed with the songs and we actually can't seem to get rid of Tim's song out of our head. Tim, I think Tim did.
So Tim amazing... won the earwarmest award.
I would say like I haven't heard their. We heard like the 90% finished product for the filming day, and they're gonna send us the final track soon. So it could still change, but yeah, we really had that song in our head, and I can show you later.
Nice.
Yeah,
but I love those kind of formats, and I had to laugh. Because have you seen by chance the newest season of Family Guy?
No, I haven't watched that in so long.
Okay, think, because actually. There is an, I had to laugh very hard because I've seen your story, Instagram story, while you were shooting for this project, whilst watching one of the newer episodes. There's one episode which basically has the story, Peter gets fired from his job. But interpreted by three different directors. First in the style of Quentin Tarantino.
Of course.
Second, Wes Anderson. And third, what's his name? This crazy Transformers guy, John May.
Oh, Michael Bay?
Michael Bay, not John May.
Oh, my God.
Michael Bay.
Oh, my God.
And it's super funny.
Is it on Netflix or?
Amazon Prime. And I've seen a super... super cool format from a kind of hip-hop magazine. They get hip-hop producers from Germany and the guests they had before can choose three LPs and the DJ they get up to has 1 hour to listen. No, he can listen through those three LPs and then has 1 hour to build a beat. And
oh,
it's
wow.
Super funny because there's been one crazy hip-hop producer I love. His name is Funkvater Frank.
Funkvater Frank.
Like Funkvater Frank.
Funkvater Frank. That's cool.
And he got three LPs. One has been pretty basic and cool, some kind of solely samples that have already been used by legends like DJ Premier or something. The soundtrack of the movie 2010 and a kind of...
Do you mean 2001? Like the...
No, there, in the 80s, there has been a film called, like, futuristic whatever movie called 2010.
Oh, crazy. Okay.
Plus the soundtrack to musical, or has been a musical about a little mermaid. So, and he had okay. to build a beat from those three...
that's cool.
From those three vinyls, and it's amazing. And it's the same procedure, okay? You get this problem. Uh-huh. Here are three random long players, whatever. Go on it. And I love this kind of format, so I'm very curious on how your project will turn out.
Oh man, that's a really what is that called again? Like, what's the show called where you saw that? Or the
it's a funny name, and I guess the joke only works in German. It's called Lass mal ein Bauen.
Like, leave me a bone, or
no, leave your bone. No, Lass mal ein Bauen is kind of a.
Is it last is like leave, like let it, right?
No, let's.
Oh, let's.
Like, let's. Let.
Last
one? It translates to let's build one. Word let's by build, word.
Oh, that makes sense.
But okay, in German, it's kind of slang for rolling a joint.
Like rolling a joint. Ah, okay.
Lass mal ein Bauen.
Oh, funny. Okay. Oh, that's cool.
So it doesn't work that good in English, but pretty funny format.
I was thinking about and like not too long ago in the school, I heard some kids like wanted another kid to stop doing something. And they was like, lasses.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he means like stop it, or like, you know,
yeah,
like leave it be or something. And then another kid was speaking in English and the same kind of incident occurred. And he was like, oh, let it. I was like, oh, that's the literal translation. Okay, yeah. Okay. And now I got it. So then loss always kind of stayed in my head. Dude, on this cabin, this mountain cabin thing, you know, if I spend enough time with a certain group of Germans and it's maybe a different generation or a different dialect or whatever, I always end up hearing a certain word a lot that I never spent much time on. Like there was a time where I felt like for a month all I ever heard was past. I mean, that's very common, you know?
Past.
And now of course it's in my vernacular and I use it on my own. And there was a time where sicher was a word that I heard everywhere all the time, and I was like, why am I hearing this everywhere? And then it became part of my, it's just like, I don't know, you start recognizing more words and then you just pick up on it. And on this weekend, the word that I heard, I felt like I heard it like 1,000 times, was Wahnsinn.
Wahnsinn?
Wahnsinn. It's like crazy, right?
Yeah.
And at first, I heard it and I think I made a subconscious choice to not Google Translate it. I was like, no, I'm going to try and figure that one out. And then they talked about some crazy explosive movie. And they're like, ah, oh, das war Wahnsinn. I was like, oh, I bet he means that's like intense or crazy or insane. Yeah. And then it kind of just made sense later, like, oh, it's crazy. Okay, something's crazy. And it's just funny how that kind of happens. Like Michael,
but I have the same with English words.
Really?
And most often with British English words, because there are some super funny ones. Like I told you a few episodes ago, it's still since 2 months or something, the English word that's stuck to my mind, British English word, is shithousery.
Shithousery.
And I absolutely love it.
That's a good one. How would you use it in a sentence? Like I'm tired of all this shithousery?
Yeah, it's...
Or that party was just...
It's been used in a lot of memes regarding the English soccer league, because it ended. And there are memes like... Because when one team gets... awarded champion of the season in England, from the point that it's clear, because they don't have a playoff system or something, so they just have kind of a regular season, and you have enough points and the other ones can't reach you, you're already champion, because there are only like 3 games left and you're like 11 points apart, but you could only get 9 points out of 3 games, so you're already champion before the season ended. Okay. That's kind of the thing. And in England it's tradition that from the moment on that you are already declared champion, because no one can reach you anymore, mm-hmm. every team you play at has to give you a guard of honor when you get on the field.
Ah, okay.
And it there was this one meme about this one player who got back to his old club who didn't treat him that good and got this guard of honor. And they just called it shithousery.
Oh, that's
like getting back. So with big balls, I'm a champion now.
That's good. Okay. Yeah, I can see. I can see why you'd like that one. I like that one too. That's a good one. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes these words just pop up and they stick. They just stand out. Yeah. I don't know why. But man, okay. So I think I'm ready now. Let me do another joke and then I'll do the heavy thing. Okay, so
I think we should get some sound effects for the jokes afterwards.
Like the drum, like ba-doop. Okay. Yeah, okay, I'll do this one. So you probably already know this one, but a group of friends are hanging out one night at a bar, and one of the friends has a terrible hunchback. You know, like the hunchback of Notre Dame? Yeah. Like this. So he has a big hunch on his back. And he goes up to the bartender to get another beer. And the bartender says, hey, you know, if you walk out into the woods and you go past that dark point where no one goes and you go all the way to the end, to the dead end, you could, there's a voice there and you can talk to that voice. You can make a wish and maybe you can get rid of this hunchback. He's like, really? So he decides to leave the bar and he goes out to the woods. And he, you know, he's so heavy on him and he's so insecure about this hunchback. And he kind of like, you know, hustles all the way down to the woods and goes into the dark part and goes all the way down to the dead end where it's really spooky and dark and scary. And he says, hello? And a voice says, do you have a hunchback? And he says, yes. And it was gone. And he stood up straight. He said, oh my God, I can't believe it. My hunchback's finally gone. This is amazing. So he runs back to the bar and he goes and he tells his friends, guys, I went into the woods and I found a voice. I made a wish and look, my hunchback's gone. I'm healed. And one of the friends in the group has a terrible, like a bum leg. He can barely walk on it. And he goes, do you think that the voice would also heal me? And he goes, of course he would. You have to go out there and try. So the guy says, okay. So he limps and drags this heavy, you know, busted leg all the way down the forest, all the way down to the last turn and all the way to the dead end at the pitch black part of the woods. And he goes, hello? And a voice says, do you have a hunchback? He goes, no. Now you do. I love that joke, man. I just love picturing him with like no. Oh my God. So bad. Okay, so I found out on we were recording Tim's segment on Thursday evening, and yeah. we had just finished, we had wrapped up all the gear, and we were just like having a beer outside in the sunset, and I think somebody sent me, I'm pretty sure somebody sent me the link. I'm pretty positive. I don't remember who. I think it was on Instagram. So there was a woman who is in this band called Pageants, and she had made an Instagram post that mentioned that she had been in a band with a certain musician, and she had, this was basically her public accusation of sexual assault against him. She made, I think, two separate rape accusations against him with a lot of other very difficult to read and inappropriate assault accusations. And so it's like, if you go to her, if you go to the Pageants band page, it's, you know, you can read it for yourself. And it's like nine slides. It's pretty graphic. It's very, very honest. It's very difficult to read. It must have been very, very difficult to write, especially to post. She said that she had difficulty for about 10 years.
That's the point. the events that she accuses.
It was 10 years ago. Exactly. Yeah, that's important to mention as well, yeah. So it was 10 years ago, everything that she's talking about, and she had left the band 10 years ago, and now she finally has the courage and the strength and everything with what's going on in the culture to talk about it. And the musician that she's accusing of raping her is a musician that I not only had deeply, deeply admired the music of, which is one thing already that would already disappoint me enough. He was a musician that when I was like 16 or 17, I discovered his music. We're the same age. He had basically broken pretty deeply and quickly into the indie music scene when he was still in high school. He got signed to like one of the most prestigious indie rock labels in the world, Sub Pop Records. He toured around. I saw his concert in New Orleans. I think maybe a tour that she might have even been on. I'm not totally sure about that. I can't be positive enough to confirm. I had written them emails. I had approached them at the concert. I had like a dinner with him. He let me in like backstage at the concert. I really respected him. He ended up years later collaborating and even playing guitar on and co-producing one of my albums. And, you know, this was like all...
You brought him in from the States.
We flew him in as like, an additional musical ear to contribute to the record and...
play guitar on it.
And to play guitar on it, yeah. And his addition to the... His contributions to the album were so exactly what we had hoped for in terms of what it sounds like. And, the musician that she's accusing of is Avi Buffalo, and his name is Avi. I think it's Avi Zahner Eisenberg. Avi Eisenberg. So yeah, Avi Zahner Eisenberg. That's his full name, and his music name is Avi Buffalo. And I'm pretty sure he's from California. I think he's my age. And when she accused him, I think this was she may have went public last Wednesday. So now it's Tuesday. It's been a little while. And he was extremely active on Instagram. I think I had to unfollow him because he was posting. Same. Yeah. He was posting very strange content, first off, like weird stuff. And he was posting like, I think he was posting like every 6 or 7 minutes or something.
Yeah. If you went to his profile, there would be like, okay, 10,000 followers, 20,000 posts or something like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of sexual stuff.
Yeah, that's already like so.
I don't want to drive the conversation to a weird place here, but
no.
That's something that came in a very strange way. Again, to my mind, mm-hmm. after I read this story.
Yeah, I mean, he had. I unfollowed him during the recording of our album because I found his Instagram so obnoxious, and. Okay, so despite what this, I'll just talk about a little bit about my experience with him in the studio because I had a lot of problems with him.
Before that, let me get in very quick for all our listeners.
Yes.
Why we're talking about this, because this is a big thing. The label Sub Pop has removed all of his music,
right.
Signed under their name. And you told me before that... a lot of people, at least some people, came up to you and said, okay, Jordan, what do you say about this whole thing? You
right.
got to know this guy, Avi Buffalo, and he played on your album.
Right.
And you came up to me and said, okay, I don't want to do a post or anything. I want to talk about this in this podcast. So there is no room for interpretation or something. And you just can, you have the room to tell what you want to
right.
talk
right.
about.
Yeah, that's the reason. Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, I had as soon as I saw the news on Thursday, I sent it to all my friends who had not only recorded on the record, but to people that I knew that they knew I had worked with him and that they knew that I had liked his music and stuff. And immediately had a handful of people writing me asking me, you know, like, am I going to say something? Am I going to post something? am I going to go back and delete everything I ever did with him? Or, you know, like, what's your move? And I thought, I don't know. I don't really know if I have a move. And right now, I'm so disappointed. I'm so shocked. And honestly, Thursday night, all I did was I sat for probably 2 hours, honestly. And I read her entire post. And then I read a lot of the comments that there had been previous accusations that I didn't know anything about, and went to those women's Twitter pages and read their accusations as well. So I think it's four. I really can't be 100% sure, but I think it's four different women. It might be less. I think I might have. I just read about Brian Callen, this comedian who just also got accused of rape and sexual assault. So I might be confusing that number. It might be two women, and I think Brian Callen might have been four. But that's not even the point. The point is that it's happened at all. The fact that it's happened at all, and that's the terrible part. So I found out Thursday, and yeah, some people asked me what I wanted to do, and I had even almost thought about doing a post, but then I thought, you know, is there really space in this conversation for another voice to just say something that everyone already feels like, okay, he's a bad guy. And I have an experience with him where I really believe this happened. Like, I really believe this. I have no space in my heart to think that this could be any sort of false. Like, you know, sometimes with certain people that you really think you know, and something bad like this happens, you have some space to be a little bit more wary of an accusation that doesn't have like immediate proof.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, especially something that has like some years on it and, you know, whatever. But I think because I'm going to talk about my experience with him in the studio and everything, and the fact that it was more than just one woman, and they were different years apart, these women.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly believe this, even without some sort of like immediate evidence or whatever, because it's really hard to talk about, because I felt that I was just so mad when I first found out, because it was like, yeah, despite the things I had problems with in the studio with him and after, he was still like such a pivotal part of my musical growth. Like, I found his first album and stuff, and it just changed everything for me. I was just in love with it. I must have listened to it 10,000 times, you know? And I waited, I think, 5 years or whatever it was for his second record. I pre-ordered it. I got the vinyl. It was like such a big thing for me, this guy's music. And to even get him on the record was like, I can't believe it. We had him in our house.
You were so happy.
I was so happy.
To get him on your record. Yeah.
So happy. So like in shock that it worked, you know? And we had him in our home. We shared an apartment in the mountains together. We shared the studio together. And it really just breaks my heart that I had put that much like trust and admiration into someone that would do anything like this. I feel kind of betrayed, and I feel kind of dumb. Like, of course, you're kind of like, how could I not have, I don't know, how could I have been so trusting to someone who could do this? But the thing is, I can't do that, and you never know.
Yeah,
you never fucking know. Yeah. You never know who's going to do something like this. So I had some problems with him when he came in the studio in the first place. He was very... Like, at first he was very distant. I felt like he wasn't doing the work that we were paying him for. And that was already an issue. And then I found him very obnoxious. His personality was very disturbing and annoying. And, you know, he was, musically, I found him kind of like a genius. Like, what he was putting on through the guitar and stuff was so incredible. And I still feel that way. Like, if there's any sense of separating this from his music, like, the stuff on this record is so special. Some of his guitar solos are my favorite solos on the record, and they emphasize the emotion that the song is all about. That's the hardest part for me, is like, he's helped create this emotion about my friends. And now I have to feel like, okay, do I have to delete everything that I ever...
This is exactly the point I wanted to ask you about, because this is such a personal record.
Yeah.
It's not just, okay, I've collected some singles over the past year. This is a It says it within the names, 12 songs for 12 friends. So I guess this runs deep.
Yeah, it's not so easy. You know, someone asked, a friend was like, okay, are you going to go back? Like, I guess I posted things about working with him maybe 3 years ago. And they're like, are you going to go back and, you know, delete everything that associates you with him? And then another person asked if I was going to, you know, say something online about it. And my thoughts about that were, you know, it's probably a good thing that I talk about it here because I have the space to do it. And, you know, I'm so upset by it. And it's probably better to not make a post because I think, but just like the first thing is the post. I don't think that's the right idea. And I think I'm not going to do that because I don't want at all to try and in any way for it to look like I'm trying to make this about me.
That's exactly the point. And you know? we have this kind of argument. We had this quite a few times recently with the whole Black Lives Matter discussion that happened online. And before that, the Me Too point. And I think it's the right thing. If you're not directly affected, if you do not have a story directly related to those heavy accusations,
right.
It sounds harsh, but don't waste space.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly.
Leave the room for the women that have something to say about this and that.
Exactly.
Like nothing. Had those horrible experiences, etc. And yeah. I guess you have the platform here to talk about it. And like we said, the room to dive in deeper and not just making it look like, okay, hi.
Right. Exactly.
I'm also here.
Yeah. The difference is like the people who listen to this show,
yeah.
they come to this show
yeah.
because they want to hear what you and I have to say.
Exactly.
And that's different from making a post, which is like, well, you're going to see it whether you like what I say or not.
Yeah.
And that's not what I'm about at all. And yeah, nothing I could ever say on a post is going to benefit her or the other victim or the families or anything.
No.
It's not going to further condemn him. I have no evidence or proof of anything of any kind of sexual behavior with him. You know, like he was a strange guy and I had a lot of problems in the process of working with him, but there was never anything that would have ever alluded that he was going to ever do anything sexual. In fact, I found him very asexual. We thought he was kind of like this weird, you know, like, I don't know, this like eunuch or something. He just didn't seem mm-hmm. like that kind of, but his posts were so strange too. And like hypersexual. So it was just very hard to read him. And, you know, like despite that, there's just nothing, there's no reason for a post. There's nothing I can add. Nope. And I don't want to do that. And then the other thing was, are you going to go back and delete your association with him? That one's a bit more difficult because at the same time, I'm obviously not going to further promote anything that I ever did with him. I don't want to encourage or make use off of his name for any profit or any sort of like,
no.
you know, anything like that, because I think it's disgusting. And I think it's, and I'm so like, the thing is, I'm just so enraged that this happened. And I'm enraged that it happened to someone that I let into my home and that someone that I admired so much, you know, and I don't want to, I don't know that going back and deleting a picture of him where I say we've hired him makes me look better or worse. I don't think it changes anything.
No.
Like I don't personally, like if I had, let's say for example, I had another podcast with him, I would probably cut that out.
Yeah.
I would probably stop doing that show the same way Chris D'Elia doesn't do his show anymore. And the same reason like Brian Callen's not on Fighter and the Kid right now. And why, I don't know why Louis C.K., if you know, not that he did, not that he raped, but that's why he doesn't have a show anymore. That's why he's not, you know, on the main page anymore. Like I would stop doing things with him if I was doing things with him now.
Yeah.
You know, if we were recording something together, yeah. that would stop. If we were doing a podcast together, that would stop. And then that would be a chance for me to publicly condemn or to say like, to make a statement of like, you guys know me as the person who is always working with him on this show. And I never knew anything about this. And I, you know, my slate's clean with this. I had no idea. But the fact was that he was a musician that I liked. We hired him to come into a studio. He played some guitar for us. He annoyed us a lot. And then I was actually a little mean to him because I talked about him pretty openly during that time about how much he disappointed me with his behavior there. And then I had to even apologize to him and tell him that was like unprofessional of me, that I should have talked to him first. And this whole like drama even went on that we even like made up after he left. I told him, I'm sorry that I talked like that, and I hope that you, you know, have a good career and stuff. You know, but that's the whole story.
No.
So for me to have hired him on one project 3 years ago and to have made an announcement about working with him like just a few times, I don't think there's any reason for me to scroll through 2 years old Instagram and delete a photo of him. Like I can, you know, yeah. But I don't think that benefits anyone. And it's not like I'm benefiting from keeping it or not keeping it. I don't understand that part of it.
Plus, and I know this is a whole nother topic and a whole nother big argument people are having to talk about someone's art differently from the person, separate the artist from the art. It's a whole nother huge argument.
Thing. Yeah.
But I mean, it is still a beautiful album that means so much to you, and it's not like that you participated on his project or whatever, or because the main ideas and the for the songs, and I guess like came from you. He just added a little something,
right?
And it's still an important album for you, and I guess no one. Okay, whole nother dimension. But no one ever thought about deleting the Lord of the Ring movies from digital platforms because of the Weinstein story.
Right. Oh, that, yeah. Okay. That's a. I didn't even.
You know what I mean? I know it is super hard, and it's a tough argument about whether you could separate the artists from the art, but since this is not about him and you didn't ever gave him, and yes, of course, even if you did, you didn't know, et cetera, but you didn't even give him a voice for something. He just played guitar for you.
That's it. That's it. Yeah. I never gave him a platform to do anything else.
Yeah.
He just showed up into a recording room and played guitar for me.
Yeah. And I guess that's something we have to get along with as a society, because rapists are guitar players.
They're politicians. They're movie producers. They're preachers. They're dads and brothers and cousins and teachers and everything. They're anything and everyone. And you just can't know. You just can't know. Yeah. Sometimes people can know, but often the case is you just are as surprised as everyone else. It's just as surprised as when someone you know has like a heart attack. You're like, I just saw them yesterday. I had no idea they were sick, or I could not have imagined they'd be gone today. No. It's the same feeling. Like I feel like I just have this giant bruise on some of my biggest musical inspiration, you know, like this fat bruise of like, I can't believe you were doing that. You fucking idiot. You monster.
Yeah.
I can't believe you were doing this.
Guess we definitely should link the article.
Yes.
You send me.
We'll put the pageants, her story in the description. And I think I can get the other Twitter accusation on there too.
Because it's read through this, guys, because I guess we all can agree on we don't want any more rapists, no matter the business or whatever. And we want to be aware of this kind of content and read this text, because yes, there is no evidence yet, but it is a pretty,
but it's pretty clear that it's
pretty clear, pretty graphic.
Yeah.
And for me, the heaviest part of this text, I guess spoiling is not a thing here.
It's after the first
case of rape, she accused, she describes a situation where they met again. So Abby Buffalo and her.
Right.
And he just went up to her like, yeah, sorry for raping you and stuff.
Right.
And goes on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, it blew me away.
And honestly, I can see him saying that because of how strange he was to work with.
Oof.
He was so.
Before that, I could not have imagined a person, because the topic of rape is one. It is a thing. It is a. So.
Yeah.
It is clear within society there are still rapists, but it's the same with racism. We already know that this is a bad thing and we don't want to be linked with that.
That's exactly
the problem with racism, where often when you call some actions of a person racist, that they feel offended because you call them racist because they know this, you don't want to be racist.
Exactly.
And I could not have imagined that in the year of, I don't know what has it been, 2010?
Something like that.
Someone says, sorry for raping you. Let's go out there and play a show.
Yeah. I mean, for him to use that terminology at all, you'd think if he didn't care about it, he would have said that differently. Like, sorry, I got a little crazy last night or something. But to actually use the word rape is like, oh man, you're sick. You're really sick. You know?
No. And I feel so bad for her. Have you heard anything further? Because I've only read this one article.
Well, I know that like basically every major indie music platform has posted an article, like Noisy and IndieWire and Pitchfork, and
Sub Pop has removed the music.
Yeah, Sub Pop, taking down his entire catalog. And I haven't looked at any other things from him. I know his Instagram's gone. I didn't look at YouTube yet to see. I can probably imagine his YouTube's cleaned up. Spotify, I guess, is cleaned out now.
But
I don't think he has a statement. Well, let's see, today's Tuesday, August 3rd.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. So I haven't, as of now, I haven't seen a statement from him. I know that I think Noisy or TMZ, no, not TMZ, he's not that famous, but someone asked a statement from him. I don't think he's put one out yet.
No.
I know that, like, similar with Chris D'Elia, when he got accused, he stopped everything on social media. And from what I heard, he was collecting a statement with his lawyers, plural maybe. And he put out like one defense statement to TMZ.
Mm-hmm.
But with Avi, I don't know. I know he's basically disappeared from social, which I guess is like the standard move. But I don't know anything yet if he's defending himself or if he's, honestly, he strikes me as someone that would just like go on the run. You know, and like move to a different town or something. And like,
but do you know anything about legal terms? Or is something happening?
From
legal side,
I don't know right now. Okay. I think I'm probably gonna re-up. So you know, the thing is, guys, this comes out Thursday. Who knows what's come out by then? You know, maybe you're listening to this and everything's changed by then. So you have to forgive if this is a bit in the past. If things change, I'm gonna try and read up on it again. But I have,
if we have any further information by Thursday, will put in the show notes.
Yeah, that's true. That's it. We can put like a little asterisk, like, you know, listen to the story first. Here's the update, you know, if you haven't heard it. And of course, as things progress with this, you know, by next week, if there's a big change, a big statement or anything, we can talk about it. But that's the main, like, I hope I didn't fumble over my words too much here. And I hope that what I said makes sense, that, you know, this was probably the best place for me to say anything if I wanted to. I want this to be about the focus on her and about this story, and that, for anybody who was, you know, thinking about the fact that they knew me and they knew that I had worked with him, that's the full extent. You know, we hired him, he played guitar, I thought he was really weird, and he went back home, and I didn't know anything about this stuff.
No.
And it just, honestly, I'm just really disappointed in all of it, and I'm really sad. I'm really sad about it, and I'm really angry at him, and I feel a little betrayed because he was kind of a musical hero. Like, I was, you know, connecting my emotion to his songs so much, and I feel like I just had all that stolen away. And that's the full thing. And, that's my say on it. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah. So thanks for sitting through that. I'm going to give you guys another joke now to cleanse the palate. Or you think it's too soon? It's probably a little too soon. Maybe we can
let's take a little break
let's
here.
Let's ease out of it. Yeah. We're going to take a 5-minute break, and then, we're going to send you guys off with a nice little joke. Okay. Yeah, we just wanted to take a little pause there to breathe out the stuff we just talked about. And we wanted to make one thing very clear during the discussion of the incident with Avi Buffalo. We weren't totally sure if we could name the victim. So in that break, we did look at the post and we realized that the victim has already named herself, and it is all right to say Rebecca Coleman is her name, and she's in the band Pageants, and you can see her post in the link we're going to put. Yeah, so...
You wanted to bring a joke.
Yes. All right. So...
Still a tough transition, but we'll hustle through it.
We can try. It's a very innocent joke, very silly, like a kid's joke.
Okay.
So, okay, let's cleanse the palate here with this one. Let me just get the... Yes. Okay. So, one day, all the animals in the forest decide that they are no longer going to poop in the woods. They say, you know what? It's messy. It's everywhere. We're always stepping in it. It stinks. We're going to build special bathrooms all around the forest that you can use, but no more pooping in the forest at all. And they all agree on it. And one day, Mr. Bear is walking in the woods collecting berries, and all of a sudden, ooh, it strikes. He's got to go, and he's got to go now. He's too far away from any of the toilets. He's sweating. He's hurting. He doesn't really know what to do, so he can't hold it back, and he just poops. So he's looking at it. And he has a sense of relief, but he's also so nervous because he sees through the distance that Mr. Fox is coming, and Mr. Fox is going to get him in trouble if he sees what he's done. So he immediately just cups his hands over it, just covers it with his paws. And then Mr. Fox walks up and he goes, "Hey, Mr. Bear, what you doing?" He goes, "Oh, nothing, you know, just enjoying the nice warm day." So what you got under your hands there?
It's a butterfly.
He was like, "Oh really? Can I see?" And he goes,
sure you can see."
And as soon as he moves his hands up, he goes, "Oh, you just missed it. It just flew away. Oh, and it pooped in the woods." That's such a stupid joke, but I love that joke. "Oh, you just missed it. Oh, it's Sean Fake. Oh, it's already gone. You already missed it." Oh, man. That's such a good one. But yeah.
But I love this kind of joke. Yesterday,
I love it.
I saw something on Instagram. Have you heard of the German gangster rapper Jesus?
No.
So he's this really bad guy. He does not give interviews. He always looks like you don't want to meet him in the dark. He's from Hamburg. He's been to prison before.
Ooh.
And he made an Instagram story yesterday. I guess it's... And he also makes a joke with a rabbit, a squirrel, and a fox. And I guess it's too long to completely translate it to English, and I guess it would not work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too funny because this guy, he has no social media concept or something. He randomly just, I don't know, puts out some posts of him posing with a gun in front of a Mercedes or something.
Nice.
And so out of the blue,
classic.
There's this really bad looking guy telling you a joke about a little rabbit and a fox.
I like that. That's good.
I have to show you afterwards. We can maybe also link that if it's still available. No, it's an Instagram story. It's not available anymore.
It was just a story. Okay, yeah.
But I guess it's too long for a complete translation.
Yeah, I mean, I do tend to... I do occasionally like those longer jokes. I remember at the recording over the weekend, man, we sat there and our friend Tim, he just told... I mean, you know him. He told like 100 great jokes, man.
We have a group with him, together with him, and he spams it.
Oh man,
with those kind of dad joke memes.
In the TV show thing with Basti, we made sure to do a little segment where we were like, you know, Tim tells really bad jokes, and then we at the end of it, he sat outside, just enjoying the sunset, and he told some really painfully bad but really good jokes at the same time. There's one of them I really like. He was like, "What do you do when your bass player knocks on the door? You pay for the pizza." I love those jokes too. Like any jokes about musicians, I love it.
But have you ever? That's one thing I want to know. Have you ever translated a joke from English to German yet?
No, I think I haven't tried to do that yet. Just the reverse. Just this one Tobias joke was easy to translate, but. No, from English into German, I haven't tried that yet. That's pretty hard, I think, because you have to, like, with English and German, like, of course, the punchline always goes at the end, but the placement of the words is totally different.
Yeah.
So it's all about the rhythm.
Yeah. You know? But you know, there's this one crazy American guy having a podcast always talking about different plateaus when learning a new language.
Oh, yeah. I mentioned that so many times.
Maybe that's another plateau. Mm. Maybe that's the last plateau. Being able to,
I think so,
completely translate jokes into another language, and they're still funny.
And it's still funny. I think that's like the ultimate language challenge, to be able to tell, to really make people laugh in another language. That's really difficult. But yeah, man, that's everything that's caught up for me. Is there anything else you wanna talk about before we call it?
Nothing urgent. I mean,
I hit all the big points today for sure.
We'll meet again next week. Hopefully.
Yes, hopefully. I think it should work out.
If your schedule doesn't lead to leaving me out of the show again.
No. I hated it without you, man. I mean, I think the first one I did alone was a bit choppy and a bit over the top.
I found it so funny. I posted it on my private social media account, but I just got a WeTransfer link, and you can add this little description to WeTransfer links there. There's a little box. And I check my mails and go to this WeTransfer link, and there's just one note. Enjoy this hour of nonsense.
That's basically how I felt about it. I just went all over the place. And then the second one, I felt like I had more to talk about, and it was more like straightforward, but you know, doing the podcast is such a therapeutic time for me.
Same.
It's, you know, it's like the most consistent amount of time in the week that I talk. You know, like I chat with my wife and with friends and stuff, but the podcast is like the most open chance for me in terms of everything that I want to say, and I can really like think about it. And I know that at least a few people want to hear it, you know, so that's feels good. I always feel kind of like, when I'm done.
And you know what? In two months from now on, the room we're recording in now will be an actual living room with a pretty decent couch, so you can even lay down for a little therapy if you want to. Oh,
that's going to be nice. You guys are moving out of this place in 2 weeks?
2 months.
2 months. Oh, okay. I was like, wow, dude. In 2 months. Okay, cool. Nice. Yeah, I think we'll probably have to do a little podcast break. And let me get the calendar up really quick, just as a little heads up. We can always let them know. But I think the last 2 weeks of the podcast, I mean, who knows if I can do something. Maybe we can do some replays, or I can do something from the phone just for fun. But like little clips, like little short things. But I think from middle of August through the last 2 weeks, I don't think we're going to be able to do it like this.
Okay.
Because I'll be gone on a holiday. So I think maybe next week.
But I'll be on a holiday as well from 14th till 23rd.
Okay, then maybe we're just not there for 2 weeks.
But maybe we can give you guys a little best of the interviews we've had within this. By the way, we're so dumb. Now we're officially 1 year old with this podcast.
Today. Or last week?
Not sure about last week.
Last week?
Last week.
Man, high five.
High five.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations to you.
So maybe next week we can do a little belated birthday special.
Yeah.
And when we're on vacation, maybe we can give the people a little best of the interviews we had in our first year artsy fartness.
That'd be great.
Plus two little three holiday impressions from both of us.
That'd be cool. Yeah, let's do that. Okay, cool. So keep listening. And if you liked what you heard today and it means anything to you guys out there, please make sure to go to wherever you're listening to the show. If it's on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, give us a rate or a comment or a review. Subscribe to the show, share it online, or just even tell a friend. And that goes a long way for shows like this. Thank you so much for listening. Happy anniversary. 1 year, Mo. I'm so happy about this. And we will talk to you guys next week. Have a great week.
I have to add one thing.
Yeah.
If you have anything to say to us or know an artsy-fartsy immigrant we should feature or you have feedback for us, don't hesitate to send a mail to podcast@m945.de.
Yes. Anything you want to say, any ideas, you can go to that email address or even on Instagram @artsyfartsyimmigrants. You can send us a DM and we will see it and we will respond.
Yes.
All right, guys. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.